harsh lessons of the past year have brought a renewed sense of urgency to change the way that we plan for and pay for and rely on our energy.
The state releases a new energy plan with a focus on renewables. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 16th of January. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaskans respond to Emonik's emergency need for food.
34 boxes of dried goods, 15 boxes of freeze, one big bag of fish, and a little canister of seal oil.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
the Alaska Community Foundation, encouraging listeners to tune into AK every weekend. Your local public radio station has airtimes.
The state released a new blueprint today to help communities across Alaska come up with cheaper and more efficient sources of energy. In announcing the plan, Governor Sarah Palin included a push for an in-state gas line, but the document is mainly focused on finding greener solutions to control energy costs. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
One of Governor Sarah Palin's most well-known phrases on the vice presidential campaign trail was drill, baby, drill. But her new message to an in-state audience is very different.
Whether we're talking about rural Alaska or the rail belt or southeast, one thing remains true. Renewable energy will be the key.
Overall, Palin set a goal of having half the state's electricity come from renewable sources by 2025. That news had Chris Rose, the director of the Renewable Energy Alaska Project, beaming.
It is a very big commitment, and I'm looking forward to working with everybody who's on board to do that to make it happen and maybe even make it happen a little bit sooner.
Governor Palin also stressed the importance of efficiency and said in many cases that might be the quickest way to bring down the high cost of energy in rural Alaska. She says beyond efficiency, the state's new plan gives specific communities a detailed analysis on which forms of energy are most cost-effective for their area. She says it identifies potential projects and then sets priorities for funding.
Because of the diversity of energy resources throughout our state and the vastly different energy challenges facing each region, our energy plan is going to result in a wide variety of actions. And we don't have to leave any community, and this administration will not leave any community without the tools to meet its energy needs for the next generation.
Steve Hagenson with the Alaska Energy Authority has been leading the effort to come up with a document for 9 months. He says it was important to travel around the state to carefully assess each community. He gives the example of Bethel, where wood is a cheap fuel source, but it's also scarce.
And they said, well, you know, it's like 100 miles up a river and getting farther every year, because they're cutting trees down. I said, well, what about these willows? And so I said, well, yeah, we got lots of willows. So sometimes the things right in front of you, you just don't see. It takes a little bit of outside thought. And so I came back, called a friend, and said, well, can you make pellets out of willows? And thinking that would be a good use of willows, and because they have lots of willows in the area. And he said, yeah, no problem.
Higginson says a local man is now working to fashion willows into broomstick-like logs that could work in existing furnaces. He says there are a lot of creative solutions like that in Alaska. When the legislature appropriated $100 million for renewable projects last year, more than 230 proposals came in. The Alaska Energy Authority has chosen 77 of those proposals that are eligible for funding, including wind, hydro, and wood chip projects. Lawmakers must give final approval during this year's legislative session. Governor Palin asked for $50 million more in her proposed budget to fund additional projects. She says she hopes Alaska will also be eligible to receive federal funding as part of President-elect Barack Obama's planned stimulus package.
I think it's more than ironic that I think it's almost providential that the state of Alaska at this time has really awakened to the idea of the potential and the reality of renewable energy projects being plugged in to find these solutions that we're seeking for our energy challenges. And then working with the feds at this time with Obama's administration, because we know that they're very keen on renewable also. So it's very good timing.
But Palin says most of the funding for the necessary new infrastructure projects will have to come from the ratepayers, families, and businesses. The energy plan also includes a recommendation for a new organization to help bring down the cost of power along the rail belt. It would be called the Rail Belt Energy Corporation. Besides finding more natural gas resources, it would look at wind, hydro, geothermal, and tidal options for generating energy. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Villages on the North Slope are stepping up to help out residents of Emonic, the Southwest Alaska village that put out an urgent call for assistance earlier this week. From KBRW in Barrow, Janelle Everett has more.
On Wednesday in Wainwright, community members stepped up and began donating food to be sent to the Yukon River village of Emonic. Linda Agnesaga, the North Slope village liaison, says her husband had been keeping up with the story, and she decided the people needed help.
We have two pages of people that had either donated food or came to help and pack them and get them ready. Most of them were shipped out this morning, and six of them just went on this flight that came in at 1. There was 34 boxes of dried goods, 15 boxes of freeze, one big bag of fish, and a little canister of seal oil.
Among the other volunteers was Ida Paniak, who says helping the residents of Emonic was just the right thing to do.
When people ask for help, we tend to go help them whether we know them or don't know them. Even though our things, there's hardly any employed people, they always still have extra. It's in them.
The food was brought to the North Slope Borough Teleconference Center, and villagers packed and labeled the food for shipping. Agnesaga says people who did not have a food donation gave her money to go to the local store to purchase food to donate to residents of Emonic. The community of Point Lay is also collecting food to send to Emonic. Point Lay Village Liaison Marie Tracy says she made an announcement on the VHF during lunch, and the community responded.
We are boxing up beluga for ducks.
Frontier Airlines plans to ship the food to Emonic for free. Reporting from Barrow, I'm Janelle Everett.
Emonic residents have received the first of those shipments. 300 pounds of food arrived today. Nicholas Tucker Sr., the Emonic resident who wrote the January 12th letter asking for help for the community, says things are moving along quickly. Tucker says the Village Corporation, Tribal Council, and city leadership have formed a committee to supervise and distribute the donations coming in, and a Village Aid bank account has been established to handle cash donations. Tucker says goods are being shipped from Lower 48 churches and other organizations. He says it's difficult to describe his gratitude for the response from Alaskans and others. He says he's hopeful enough will come in to meet Emonic family needs, with maybe some left over.
We will not refuse the nearby village of Nunamikaw, Alakanuk, and Katlik. Nunamikaw right now, I think, is running out of fuel, too, and they don't have a store. Their store closed down.
Tucker says the Tribal Council has had calls from other villages in need,
asking if they could get food from here. So we're going to share with our neighbors, just as Imanaka residents are sharing with these ones that need it right now.
Tucker says he participated in a teleconference with state leaders from the Department of Commerce, a representative from the governor's office, Chalista Corporation, and the Association of Village Council Presidents this morning. Emonic plans a potlatch tomorrow to distribute what donations have reached the village so far. Tucker says snow has stopped any further flight deliveries for at least today. Nome Democrat Donnie Olson represents Emonic in the state Senate. He says he's familiar with the problems the people face throughout the region, and he regrets that the legislature cannot move quickly enough to give immediate relief to the community. However, he says there's no doubt people in that community, as well as others, are in trouble.
When you have a household and a family that's suffering from frozen pipes and plumbing and doesn't have a full barrel of oil and has got even a smaller wood pile to go ahead and burn, nothing is satisfactory, especially when you're trying to keep a family fed and keep them warm and send the kids to school at an appropriate time. It's an uphill struggle living out in anywhere. We have been in contact with the governor's office, with a number of the departments, to try and make sure that they are indeed hearing what's going on out there.
Olson says he's optimistic that the problems will be resolved. He says, if you're not optimistic, you wouldn't survive in rural Alaska. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, tempers fly over the issue of capital creep in Juneau.
I'm the one that has identified the 200 jobs that left. We've lost $6 million in payroll a month.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences. The Alaska Public Radio Network, in cooperation with our member stations, provides the most complete, timely, and accessible source of Alaska news, current affairs, and cultural information.
Salvage operations began this morning for the 166-foot oil industry supply vessel Monarch, which sank Thursday beneath an offshore oil platform in the ice-choked waters of North Cook Inlet. The salvage vessel Champion and the Coast Guard cutter Hickory conducted sonar scans in the area adjacent to the Granite Point platform to determine the orientation and exact location of the Monarch, but Coast Guard spokeswoman Sarah Francis says they could not find it.
We didn't locate it today. We do know where it sank, but since then, the area where it sank is not the area where it's currently located. They will be continuing their search tomorrow, assisted by the tug Vigilant.
The Coast Guard is working with cleanup contractor Alaska Shadow Corporation, the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, and the Cook Inlet Regional Citizens Advisory Council. Francis says poor weather canceled at least one aspect of today's operations.
Well, the weather conditions did prevent one of the overflights today. This afternoon, we saw inclement weather in the area. On scene, currently, they have heavy ice due to the tides. And we anticipate that weather will continue throughout the weekend.
The Granite Point platform is operated by Chevron. Workers have reported no significant damage to the substructure as a result of contact with the vessel. The Monarch had between 35,000 and 38,000 gallons of diesel fuel on board, along with about 2,000 gallons of lube oils and various amounts of chemicals that it was delivering to the oil platform. Francis says a light sheen that was noticed Thursday near where the vessel sank now appears to have dissipated.
We got a report from the crew of the platform that there was an intermittent sheen. At about 10 o'clock, the Unified Command did an overflight of the area and did not see any additional signs of pollution.
The cause of the sinking remains under investigation by the Coast Guard. The Monarch was operated by Kenai-based Offshore Systems Incorporated. The judge who presided over the case of former Senator Ted Stevens is demanding that the Justice Department explain its recent actions. Judge Emmett Sullivan is going to the highest level of accountability, asking U.S. Attorney General Michael Mukasey to provide an account. The problems revolve around a whistleblower complaint filed last month and whether or not the Justice Department was honest with the court about the situation. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Judge Sullivan acknowledged that it's an unusual request for the Attorney General of the United States to get involved, but Sullivan wrote in a ruling today that it's necessary for either Mukasey or his designee to speak on behalf of the Justice Department. Sullivan says it looks like attorneys from multiple divisions of the department may have intentionally withheld important information from the court. It centers around a whistleblower complaint filed last month. An FBI agent alleged a fellow agent and prosecutors on the Stevens case acted improperly, getting too close to sources and mishandling evidence. The Justice Department lawyers said last month that the FBI agent was protected by whistleblower status. So when Ted Stevens' lawyers filed a motion asking for a new trial, they had to tread carefully and couldn't name the agent or those he accused. They said that made their job harder. But when it came time for the Justice Department to tell their side of the story this week, they said actually FBI agent Chad Joy is not protected by whistleblower status and that they'd known that all along. Judge Sullivan was angry and confused and demanded an explanation by today. The Justice Department asked yesterday for more time to respond or for the judge to change his mind and skip the explanation. Its lawyers said one of the prosecutors misspoke in court this week when they said Chad Joy was not protected and that actually his status hasn't yet been determined. In Sullivan's ruling today, the judge granted the Justice Department an extra day to respond, but he didn't buy their excuse that a prosecutor misspoke in court this week. Sullivan wrote that the government's latest explanation only clouds the issue and raises more questions. Judge Sullivan called the explanations wholly incredible and writes that it's hard to believe an entire team of very successful attorneys could have pored over the FBI agent's situation for 10 days and not understood it. Sullivan said this is not the first time in the Stevens case where the prosecutors have been accused of serious allegations of misconduct. He said they still haven't given a credible answer to what happened with the whistleblower situation, so that's why the judge is going to the top, and by 5 p.m. tomorrow, the U.S. Attorney General or his proxy must explain. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
The Interior Department has proposed a new plan for expanded offshore oil and gas leasing, including in Alaska's waters. Even though the Bush administration has only days left in power, officials claim the new plan will give the incoming Obama administration more options to consider. The Interior's Mineral Management Services Bureau is preparing a new five-year program to run from 2010 to 2015. MMS spokesman Nick Party says the new plan was prompted because the president and Congress recently loosened restrictions on developing the Outer Continental Shelf.
There were restrictions on offshore drilling that were in place during the summer. With the high price of energy and everything that was going on at that time, the president felt that it was it was right to lift the executive ban, which he did. And then Congress followed with the lifting of the congressional moratoria, which now opened up the areas offshore.
Some new Alaska leases are included in the draft program. MMS Alaska Region spokeswoman Robin Casey says the proposed Alaska leases weren't affected by the recent lifting of moratoria, but MMS included them in the new plan nonetheless. Casey says the Obama administration will have the option of moving forward with them or backing off.
We are starting this process to give them the opportunity to say, yes, we'd like to add these additional sales, or perhaps, no, we'd like to just continue with the current five-year program that we're working on under now. So we're given the new administration an opportunity to get a head start if they wish to come up with a new five-year program.
The draft plan adds five proposed lease sales. Two would be in the Beaufort Sea and one in the Chukchi Sea. Another would be in the North Aleutian Basin, and the last would be a special sale in Cook Inlet. David Dixon with the Alaska Wilderness League says the Bush administration is trying to push through as many oil development projects as possible before it leaves office.
This is no surprise coming from the outgoing Bush administration. It's a repeat of their continuing effort to expand oil and gas development in the already stressed Arctic Ocean ecosystem.
Dixon says he hopes to see President-elect Obama's incoming Interior Department staff cancel this new proposed Outer Continental Shelf oil and gas leasing plan. At this point, it's only in the initial drafting stage and will have to go through public feedback and environmental impact studies, a process that takes about 2 years.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Grant Station, finding grants for nonprofit organizations, schools, and governmental agencies throughout the U.S. and Canada. Grant Station, fast track to funding. On the web at grantstation.com.
President-elect Barack Obama's pick for Secretary of the Interior Department says he'll restore integrity and bring back ethics to the department. Colorado Democratic Senator Ken Salazar underwent questioning yesterday at his nomination hearing. Salazar said he'll clean up what he called the mess at the Interior Department and cited a report by its inspector general delivered to Congress in 2006.
The IG said, quote, simply stated, short of a crime, anything goes at the highest levels of the Department of the Interior. Ethics failures on the part of senior department officials have been routinely dismissed with a promise not to do it again.
Salazar went on to say that, in fact, illegal activities did happen at the Interior Department. Employees at its Minerals Management Service were accused of accepting gifts from the energy industry and doing drugs and having sex with oil and gas company officials. Also, last year, an internal investigation found that an official at the Fish and Wildlife Service, Julie McDonald, cited played politics with the endangered species list. McDonnell resigned under pressure, but Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon asked Salazar if he would re-examine some of her decisions, which still remain in effect.
There's no substitute for good science to guide the kinds of issues that you talk about with the Fish and Wildlife Service, and so we will make sure that that's what guides us as we move forward with decision-making, and I will assure you that the people that we will bring in to oversee those efforts will be people who will make the calls based on the balls and strikes of science, not on the balls and strikes of politics.
Salazar was asked about the controversial subject of whether climate change should be regulated under the Endangered Species Act. He gave a more direct answer than current interior officials have about the relationship between climate change and species like the polar bear, but he stopped short of saying what he would do.
There is no doubt that climate change and global warming is having an impact on a whole host of important natural features of this world, including the species that we have. And it's something that we will take a look at as we look at climate change within the Department of Interior and within the Obama administration. Now, the role that the ESA will play into all of that, that's something that we will take a look at as we move forward, but I don't have a specific answer to your question on that today.
Salazar did pledge to push for energy independence, take on a new agenda in dealing with Native Americans, and start initiatives for land and water conservation. Democrats and Republicans on the Energy Committee praise Salazar, whose confirmation was assured by both parties. Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski asked about his level of support for offshore oil drilling. Salazar said he believes it can be part of a comprehensive energy approach. Who's to blame for capital creep? That issue was hotly debated yesterday at a Juneau Chamber of Commerce luncheon that was supposed to focus on the upcoming legislative session, but talk turned to finger-pointing over the large number of jobs relocated out of the capital city during the Palin administration. Governor Palin says state workers should be where they can best serve the public. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander has more.
Since Governor Sarah Palin took office, some 200 state jobs have been transferred out of the capital city. Greg O'Clery, labor commissioner during the Murkowski administration, pointed the finger of blame yesterday at Juneau legislators at the Juneau Chamber of Commerce luncheon.
Where the hell were you people? This patty cake for this governor's gone along too long.
He said Juneau legislators have failed the town by allowing Governor Palin to transfer positions to Anchorage or Fairbanks. The administration has adopted a policy that a job will be moved if it has difficulty filling the position in the Capitol. Legislators, however, have not been standing idly by. Representatives Beth Kurtula, Andrea Dahl, and Senator Kim Elton have been blowing the whistle for some time now.
I'm the one that has identified the 200 jobs that left. I'm the one that has told this community, the Chamber, the Alaska Committee, the realtors, that we've lost $6 million in payroll a month.
The Juneau delegation, all Democrats, has asked the administration to alert them when jobs are to be moved. Instead, they hear from constituents after the fact. Kurtula says she continuously complains about jobs going north.
You know, if I could have thrown myself over her, I would have done it. This governor has been a disaster for keeping jobs in Juneau, and I'm sorry, Greg, but Sarah's not listening to me, and she's not listening to anybody that I can tell from Juneau.
Dahl lost her House seat in the November election to Republican Kathy Munoz, who will be sworn in on Tuesday as the representative for House District 4. Munoz says she'll have a better relationship with Governor Palin because she's a Republican. Palin is the only Alaska governor who has not lived in the capital city, and it's common knowledge her husband Todd asked the House Speaker to support legislation to move the capital. Juneau has battled the issue for years. And previous governors, including Democrat Tony Knowles, allowed commissioners to live outside the Capitol. But Palin has taken that to a whole new level, Elton says.
When we have a governor who has just been revealed in email messages sent in March of 2007 that has told her people that she doesn't want to be in Juneau, she wants to govern from Anchorage, where most of the people live,
If you think for a minute that this is the fault of the legislative delegation, you are pointing your finger at the wrong person.
Elton says the only hammer lawmakers have is persuasion and budget cuts. But he told chamber members the administration isn't listening to legislators, and reduced state budgets only hurt Alaskans. Chamber President Chuck Collins raised a clenched fist to the audience so as not to point fingers at anyone. He told members that Kurtula and Elton were speaking the truth, and laying the blame won't solve Juneau's problem.
I happen to know what the emails say. I happen to know what the governor is doing. And in some odd way, she probably justifies what she's doing because of population balance. I don't know. The dam capital is in Juneau. It's going to stay here if we have anything to do about it. And I know every one of you feels the same way I do. But if we fight amongst ourselves, and I'm not pointing a finger at anybody, I'll just do this. If we fight amongst ourselves, it will not get better. It'll get worse.
Comparing the number of jobs statewide to those in the capital city, Governor Palin says Juneau shouldn't panic.
200 jobs out of 24,000, if that's accurate, I don't think that's something to panic over, that kind of capital creep. I think it's important that our staff members, whether they be in Fairbanks or in rural Alaska or in Anchorage, that they are where the people whom they are serving need them to be. And if we thought that they would solely serve best in Juneau, we would have them in Juneau. I don't have a problem with staff being throughout the state if that's where they're going to best serve.
The actual number of full, part-time, and seasonal state workers across Alaska is about 17,000, according to payroll manager Mark Minthorn. About 3,360 of them are in the capital city of Juneau. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
Record high temperatures are being logged around the interior again as warm air continues to funnel over much of the state. National Weather Service meteorologist Ted Fathour in Fairbanks says current conditions are dramatically different from a week ago.
Quite a change. A number of stations have had a 90-degree rise in temperature over the past week. You remember when it was 40 below?
Several interior locations have registered high temperatures in the 40s and 50s, in several cases breaking daily and even monthly records. Freezing rain and moist air are condensing on cold road surfaces and making roads slippery. There's also fresh snow in some areas. Fathour says the region will get a final shot of warm air tonight before conditions shift to a cooling pattern that could bring lows down to zero by Monday. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Janelle Everett in Barrow, Casey Kelly in Homer, Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feitz. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Duncan Moon is our vice president for media production. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The Rasmussen Foundation is announcing March 1st as the deadline to apply for an Individual Artist Awards grant, which provides funding directly to artists to support their creative work. You can sign up to participate in one of the Rasmussen information sessions to be held the week of January 19th by calling 297-2876. Or go online at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation. Providing statewide news coverage since 1978, we are the Alaska Public Radio Network, APRN, your source for Alaska's news.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.